Okay, so good morning everyone. Thanks for showing up. Yeah, and thanks to the organizers, A, for putting together this nice program, and B, for letting me speak. So I'm going to continue the Kagome Fest, and I'm going to be talking about fluctuation-induced ordering on the Kagome lattice. So the outline is I'm going to talk about the classical Kagome-Heisenberg anti-ferromagnet, and to do this, I'll first give you an introduction to order by disorder, the kind of folklore that was established in the 1990s. Then I'm going to say something about previous work on the Kagome-Heisenberg antiferromagnet, in particular coplanar order by disorder there, and problems of simulating the low temperature regime. Then going to present a new algorithm we've developed for actually simulating the low temperature regime, which wasn't possible so far. And then I'm going to use this to describe what happens at low temperatures, and in particular to show that there's spin order at low temperatures induced by thermal fluctuations. Okay, so here is the order by disorder introduction very briefly. So this is, everyone knows that we tend to think of frustrated systems as those which have a high ground state degeneracy. Historically speaking, the Kagome antiferromagnet has played a tremendous role here because it was really the system which, following work by Obradors, kicked off the field. So these Cornu-Sheng triangles, Heisenberg-Hamiltonian, can be written as a sum over all triangles labeled by alpha of the total spin of a triangle squared. Total spin is L here, because you see if you multiply the sum of the three spins together, the cross terms give you SI dot SJ. So you see that in the ground state, each triangle has to have zero total moment, such as in this state here. And then if you build this triangle-based network, which forms the Kagome lattice, you immediately see that there are local degrees of freedom in the ground state. So basically, say, if you have a Star of David like this, with the spins pointing up, then the other two spins can basically rotate about the axis formed by the red spin. And this is something you can tile on the lattice so that you've got a finite density of these local degrees of freedom. So this has, so the Kagome magnet, which in the Heisenberg case has 2 degrees of freedom per spin, still has a finite number of degrees of freedom per unit volume in the ground state. So even at zero temperature, there's an extensive ground state dimensionality accessible. So degeneracies, of course, are going to be extremely brief here, intrinsically unstable. As you know, if you plot the density of states of such a magnet, there's this gigantic delta function peak at zero energy, so that as a result, any perturbation is strong, because that zero energy space doesn't come with an intrinsic energy scale to do perturbation theory in. So that in practice, subleading terms determine what the low temperature behavior does. And what we call a cooperative paramagnet is the regime found in many frustrated magnets between the freezing temperature or some ordering temperature and the temperature characteristic of the interaction energies, where the system is in a constrained manifold but still has access to a gigantic amount of phase space. So what happens below tends to be non-generic, but in model systems, this non-generic regime basically never shows up, and you can extrapolate the behavior of the system all the way down to zero temperature, and then you find all sorts of spin liquids and spin ice and similar phases there. Okay, so thermal order by disorder is now the very simple concept that you basically say if you're sitting at finite temperature, what you actually want to minimize is not the internal energy U, but the free energy. And since the internal energy is completely flat, to a good approximation, you can think of the free energy as just being the entropy. So what you basically want to do is maximize the entropy. So in this little cartoon here, if you think of X being the parameterization of the high-dimensional ground state, ground states, and Y being the parameterization of the directions perpendicular to it, then the sort of two cartoon pictures that you can think of is cartoon number one, amount of phase space available to the system around the ground states is more or less uniform around all the ground states, so that there's no order by disorder, whereas there may be the case that there's one particular point which is much where fluctuations are much softer than around the remainder of the ground states, and so then the entropic weighting of this state may actually concentrate the probability density around this particular point. And it turns out that ordered states tend to have the highest entropy. This is not a theorem, but just a factual observation. And so that if this point here is particularly long-range correlations, entropic fluctuations can induce ordering here. This is, of course, counterintuitive. Normally, one thinks of fluctuations as destroying order rather than inducing order. And the way this intuition gets fixed is that if you start with weak thermal fluctuations, they induce order, and then if you increase thermal fluctuations, they in turn destabilize the order that they stabilized in the first place. And they do this basically by increasing the fluctuations to a degree that the localization around this point is no longer visible. So just a very, very simple example, which is actually quite generic. Imagine you've got a totally abstract model system with two degrees of freedom, x and y, which lie between 0 and 1. The energy is the product of the two, so that at some temperature T, the system is forced to live between inside this green area, which is bounded by the curve x times y equals t. And then the sort of a more precise statement of order by disorder is that for any epsilon, that for any epsilon larger than zero, there's a temperature, so that the area around the origin, which is inside both the green and the green area and this blue circle, is always bigger than the bigger than all the area around it, so that in the limiting case of temperature going to zero, all the probability densities localized near the origin. So you see, even though in principle the system could explore all the axes between 0 and 1, in practice it only explores the region around the origin. So this is basically how order by disorder functions. And the reason that ordered states tend to have high fluctuations is because these crossings of different sort of branches of the ground state manifold tend to take place at, say, collinear states, where you can tilt the spins in different directions at low cost and energy. Okay, so I think one of the big things in frustrated magnetism, I think I cited the three seminal papers here, which were published around 1992 by Premichandra, Pierce Coleman, Harris, Berlinski, and Callan, and Chalker, Holdsworth, and Schender, which really played an important role for forming our view of how thermal fluctuations add. So what they showed is that all coplanar states which satisfy this total spin zero constraint actually have exactly the same harmonic spin wave spectrum. And this harmonic spin wave spectrum in particular contains an entire branch of zero energy excitations, which you can basically think of these kind of twist modes I showed earlier. So basically, as you lower the temperature, the system goes into these coplanar states, even though a lot of non-coplanar states are available, but thermal fluctuations actually localize the system near these coplanar states. So there's been a lot of study of this over the years. So in particular, a nice paper by Zhytomyrsky a couple of years ago analyzed these order parameters in somewhat more detail. So coplanar order is basically a quadrupolar order. You can also think of this idea that you have these three spins lying in a plane. If you think of these now as xy variables and say this is the angle theta equals 0, 120 degrees and 240 degrees, if you multiply these angles by 3, then you find that e to the 3 I theta actually has long range order here. And so you see that at very low temperatures, below 10 to the minus 2 J, and these order parameters take off. As far as at the harmonic level, all of the different coplanar states are perfectly degenerate, because not only do they have the same energy, zero, but they also have the same spin wave spectrum and therefore the same fluctuation weighting. So these states, all these coplanar states, you can now map onto a POTS model. You can basically call one spin direction red, the other green, the other one blue. And then you can see that each triangle has one red, green, and blue spin. So that's just a ground state of the antiferromagnetic POTS model on the Kagame lattice. This is something we're going to use later. As a general disclaimer, this is a two-dimensional system. So order is and breaking of continuous symmetries is not possible. So in principle, order is always cut off by temperature. But the distance at which it's cut off is exponentially large. So in practice, if you put in numbers, you find that the correlation lengths actually become macroscopic at even realistic temperatures. OK, so I've now argued that there's basically this coplanar order by disorder. And one of the questions is, if I write a cartoon like this, of course, I've also got spin order. There's a regular pattern to where the spins sit here. So the question is there actually long-range spin order present as well? And this has been unknown so far. The reason, basically, there hasn't been all that much progress is that analytically, In analytics, this is an extremely hard problem because basically, as I said before, the harmonic spin wave spectra are exactly degenerate, so you are interested in anharmonic terms which lift these degeneracies, and it's very hard to do a control theory given you've got all these flat directions present. It was shown by Baxter, or rather transposing ideas by Baxter, that the unweighted coplanar POTS ensemble, so without additional anharmonic weightings, is actually critical, sitting at a critical point. I'll come back to that later. Numerics, somewhat surprisingly, it's unknown what happens, because basically as soon as you go into a into one of these coplanar states, you now have free energy barriers, which are purely entropic in origin, which existing algorithms are not able to surmount. So basically, even on the harmonic level, what you find is that there are these coplanar states with which are minimum in free energy. And then as coplanarity gets stronger and stronger, it's no longer possible to activate over these over these free energy barriers. So and there have been numerical studies for 2 decades. None of these have actually managed to solve this problem. And of course, this is a classical system. It turns out that not even small systems can be solved exactly. Approximately exactly, such as to machine precision, like exact ionization does, because basically you've got an infinite dimensional configuration space. So even solving this for 27 spins has not been possible. Okay, so the central thing that I'd like to present to you now is a cluster algorithm for the Heisenberg model, which actually allows you to go to low temperatures. This is based on an analysis of how this degeneracy of the how the identical spectra for the different coplanar spin states come about. And so this is basically S is the spin configuration which you perturb about, and L is the total spin of a triangle, which is zero in the ground state and which is therefore the appropriate variable in linear spin wave theory. And what you basically find is that if you take two components of the spins, say the X and the Y component, and invert them while keeping the Z component the same, so eta is minus one, and at the same time you multiply the small fluctuations by a factor of minus one, then the form of the equations of motions remains the same. What this basically means, and this is, of course, comes as no surprise, if you take these, if you take a row, a cluster of spins, which is sort of green, blue, and so on, what this means is that if you take one of the components, say the X component, and invert it, then you interchange the colors green and blue, and then you get to a new allowed ground state. But what this says is more. It actually says that if you basically do this and you keep track of what the small fluctuations away from this ideal state are, as far as the harmonic fluctuations are concerned, you can map this state, this ideal state plus fluctuations, onto a harmonically equivalent ideal state plus fluctuations. So the reason a conventional cluster algorithm fails, if you just exchange these spins, you basically would be taking the total spin on this tetrahedron and moving it onto that tetrahedron, but only partially because these spins here remain fixed, and therefore these exchanges don't work. However, what we've basically done is we've decomposed the spins into essentially an ideal state with sort of small fluctuations around it, and we basically keep the small fluctuations where they are in a triangle and only then move the underlying ideal state around. And of course, the all the problems here is in the details of how you do this to make sure that basically the harmonic part of the excitation spectrum remains exactly untouched. But it's possible to do this so that basically the only thing that you don't have control over are these anharmonic parts. So these fluctuations which are not treated within this linear spin wave theory, but this is something you can then actually Monte Carlo sample efficiently for significantly larger systems than was possible before. So in practice, we can now equilibrate systems with thousands of spins in the limit of zero temperature. So I'll just show this here. So we now can show that there actually is a low temperature regime, which we can identify, which sets in well below 10 to the minus 3 J. So I've shown here for a system of, say, I think 3,000 spins, a correlation function halfway across the system. And what you see is at high temperatures, this correlation function has a particular value. Then coplanar order by disorder sets in. And then when coplanar order by disorder is basically perfectly developed, around 10 to the minus 4 J, nothing further happens. And as you cool the system further down to 10 to the minus 5 J, and you can actually cool it as far as you like, end up with no further changes in the correlation function. So basically what this means is that there's a low temperature regime, which is where the correlations are temperature independent. That is to say, the Boltzmann factors no longer have temperature appearing in them explicitly. OK, and it's this low temperature regime that we're going to analyze. So let's analyze this in some more detail. So one thing the central result is going to be basically that the correlations are significantly enhanced over what they were without this this anharmonic weighting. One way one can see this is by looking, by analyzing the system in terms of a height model. So the height model is something that I think may have cropped up already in some talk here. So basically, instead of defining the spins, you now define a dual variable, a height which lives in the center of the plaquettes. And as you go from the center of one plaquette to another, you just add the value of the spin that you meet in between. And so if you go around, since these three spins add up to zero, you end up to where you end up where you started from, because the sum z a alpha equals plus z, the difference means z alpha, and itself as you go around is just the sum of these three spins. Okay, the reason that this is a useful model to look at is, as I mentioned before, this POTS model, where you don't have any anharmonic weighting, is exactly at a critical point. And what we basically have to answer then is, if we add these anharmonic fluctuations, do we go in one direction in the away from the critical point, or in the other direction from the critical point? So if we go to a place which is less ordered, it turns out that we end up in what's called the rough phase of the height model, so that we get algebraic spin correlations and basically across the Tsaulis phase. Whereas if we move in the other direction, we get a flat phase, which means that there's a Kossuth-Tsaulis transition into a long-range ordered state. And in this height model, one can actually classify all the candidate orders and then check for them explicitly. OK. So the tuning parameter as far as this height model is concerned is called a stiffness k. And the way one can extract the stiffness is essentially by evaluating it configuration by configuration by this mapping, Fourier transforming it, and then you see that the action is basically the height times Q squared, so that by equipartition you expect the correlations of Z at small wave vector to be 1 over KQ squared. So if you now want to ask, is the stiffness going up so that you move towards the ordered state, or down so that you move into the Kossuth-Tsaulis phase, what you need to do is look at the ratio between fluctuations of the stiffnesses in the unweighted ensemble compared to the Heisenberg ensemble. And this is what's plotted here. And so you see this ratio for different system sizes in our Heisenberg simulations compared to the POT simulations, so the unweighted simulations. If it went to 1, we would be sitting at a critical point. If it went down, we would be moving into the Kossuth-Tsaulis phase, but it's actually going up, and it means we're going into the ordered phase. And so you see that it keeps going up and up for the system sizes that we can study. OK, and so that basically means that we get an enhanced tendency to order it this root 3 by root 3 wave vector, and I'm going to study this in more detail in the remaining slides. OK, what I'd like to emphasize at this point is that even though we are able to simulate relatively large systems of several thousand spins, this is still a long way away from the thermodynamic limit, simply for the reason that in all these Kossuth-Tsaulis phase transitions, the approach to the long-range ordered value of the ordered moment is actually rather slow, and also because the ordered moment is actually rather small. You're basically sitting only a short distance away from the ordering point. So in order to be able to go to simulate larger systems, we've now tried to extract effective model parameter to map the system onto a discrete model, which we can then simulate on much, much larger systems. So what we've done here is we've tried to fit the entropic weights, which our algorithm implicitly calculates, by an additional interaction to the POTS model, simply by taking the correlations fit and adding another parameter to the POTS model, and then seeing for which value of this POTS parameter the correlations of the weighted ensemble agree with the extended POTS model. So in practice here, I'm showing the POTS model, which are the blue crosses. I'm showing our simulations of the Heisenberg model in red. And then I'm showing the POTS model with a small additional next nearest neighbor interaction, which you can see then makes these red and the green points coincide completely. OK, so this coupling I'm writing is J2 equals 0.019. So to emphasize, this is an entropic coupling. That is to say, if you go to low temperatures, you should think of this as some effective J2 equals 0.019 times temperature. And then if you put it in the Boltzmann factor, the temperature factor just goes out. And so it means that you've got a very small coupling in the limit of zero temperature, which distinguishes between the different coupling states. OK, so this now is a model which we can simulate for much larger systems, because basically for these discrete models, there are now very efficient cluster algorithms available, which allow you to go not just to a size of a few thousand spins, but actually allow you to go sizes of a few million spins. So that's what we've done. We've simulated our systems with over a million spins. And we've considered a broader phase diagram where we take this effective parameter, which we've taken here, J2 equals 0.019, and we let it vary all the way between 0, which is the unweighted Potts ensemble, to a large value where there's a very clearly visible order. The reason we're doing this particular variation is that we know what the detailed scenario is from the field theory. We expect that there's data collapse for a costed Soulis transition with a critical value of this J2, which is equal to 0. So that's the nice thing about having this exact solution. If we want to take all of this data and collapse it, we've only got one fitting parameter, because we know where the critical point sits to start with. And so here I've shown all the data that we've taken. And then here I'm showing the collapse, which is basically something like the correlation length here. And here it's something like the ordered moment. And you see that all of these data points, are shown here, including the critical point and everything to the right of the transition, nicely collapse onto one scaling plot. So this basically supports the idea that what we have here is a costed Soulis transition with a critical point where it should be, and with us, with the physical system, actually sitting on the ordered phase to the right-hand side here. Okay, so I should say that what's remarkable here is that even in the Potts simulations, you're actually not sitting in the asymptotic regime where the order parameter has plateaued out. In fact, you have to go to a coupling which is sort of 3 to 5 times larger in order to reach that particular limit. And perhaps also somewhat surprisingly, the reason you can't reach this limit is not really because the order parameter is all that small, whereas it is remarkably small, less than 10%. This is something, of course, you could easily resolve. The reason you can't reach the thermodynamic limit is because the approach to it is really excruciatingly small. There's a gigantic correlation length of the size of a few hundred lattice spacings. And so, because of this, even though the thing actually asymptotes to a value which isn't all that small, it just keeps bending and bending and bending, and you never really get into the regime where this is constant. OK, so the order, therefore, is hard to discern, rather than because of its smallness, because of the slow approach to it. And this is the opposite, by the way, for those who thought about this a bit more, of the chirality, where it's actually the order parameter, which is tiny, and which we're still working to resolve in detail. OK, so 3 minutes left. OK, that should be enough for an extended summary. So let me summarize. So I've, without much detailed motivation, I talked about the Heisenberg-Hagame classical antiferromagnet. I hope for this audience, given its important role it's played in the field of frustrated magnetism, this is relatively agreed upon. And of course, all the recent progress that we've had in the classical spin-a-half problem also motivated us in part to think harder about the open question of the order by disorder on the infinite spin version. So this turns out to be a very complex instance of order by disorder. So in the harmonic approximation, there's this coplanar order, which is quadrupolar, octopolar, which has been well understood for a long time. But we find, in addition, that anharmonic fluctuations give you this dipolar spin order, which is just long-range spin order captured by this particular cartoon, where you've got a tripling of the unit cell. So this is the root 3 by root 3 order ordered state. The ordering turns out to be delicate. So this is a T equals 0 order parameter in a classical system, which is less than 10% of the saturated value. So typically, when you have classical spin models, since at zero temperature, you can, in principle, switch off fluctuations altogether, they tend to have completely saturated order parameters. So this is an extreme counterexample. The system still fluctuates enough between the different values of the that are accessible to it so that even in the limit of zero temperatures, it's considerably delocalized on this manifold of ground states. And we find that there's a very, very large crossover length of several hundred lattice constants. We've, in particular, developed a new efficient algorithm, and somewhat amusingly, even though anyone could have done this in the last 20 years, just at the same time as us, David Landau and Dr. Schnabel in Leipzig came up with a similar algorithm, which they also published this summer. So in particular, we can access a low temperature regime, and we can show that in the limit of low temperatures, there is a regime which has weak but enhanced and temperature independent weak, enhanced, and temperature-independent correlations in the limit of zero temperature. Then I've presented an effective field theory in terms of the height model and also an effective spin model in terms of the POTS model, which have enabled us to access long wavelengths and large length scales, which has then enabled us to conclude that this is the correct ordering pattern. And then, of course, there are a lot of questions which people have been studying over the years. So if one goes beyond the nearest neighbor infinite spin Heising model, what about semi-classics? What about further perturbations? And there are also several people here who are working on that. Connection to experiment, of course, needs to be tempered by these observations here. And I would also like to mention that our algorithm also works for other systems like pyrochloric XY magnets, hyperkagame garnet lattices, and so on. Thank you very much for your attention.
So we have time for discussion.
It's more a comment, because actually we've done very similar analysis, but instead of taking into account thermal fluctuations, we have taken into account quantum fluctuations, and we also find the square root of 3 by square root of 3 order. And it's not surprising, because this is the state which maximizes the number of small loops. What is more surprising to me is that it's never observed experimentally. So. I mean, yeah, do you have any idea why this state is so improbable?
So, of course, I apologize for leaving out a review of the gigantic body of work that people have done on this. I mean, these original seminal papers have all been cited hundreds of times, and I've left out also, including my own work, several pieces of work on this. So. You're absolutely right that the root 3 by root 3 order is the one that one would naively expect, but one shouldn't forget that we've got a number of counterexamples. Like if you go to the system in a field at the 1/3 magnetization plateau, in fact, you get semi-classics, which gives you Q equals 0 order. So I think these pictures with the small loops are very intuitive. But as I was trying to show that at the harmonic order, we can already see that they're not in fact correct as far as harmonic fluctuations are concerned. The length of the loop plays absolutely no role rigorously.
Sure, but and the harmonic level, and that's what we've considered, right. then it selects this.
Right, but as I say, they're counterexamples. So, it is correct that a posteriori, these are very good ways of rationalizing the result. But if one had found the opposite result, then I wouldn't have been particularly surprised. The one thing to emphasize, perhaps, which I try to say here, is that the as far as the quantum case is concerned, I think you're very likely to get some sort of order, because basically there's not this possibility of having a temperature-independent, only entropically driven Boltzmann factor in the limit of low temperatures. Here, the counter, the other option would have been that you actually stay in the costed Saunders phase. And that would have just been that the effective long wavelength stiffness happens to have happens to be pushed in the opposite direction. So I have absolutely zero intuition what, after you integrate out all the short wavelength degrees of freedom, the effective stiffness goes a little bit to the right or a little bit to the left. And I think people here who say have worked on these triangular supersolids have also spent some time thinking about whether you get one type of order or the other type of order in a sort of similar setting. And these lattice-based intuitions on what things look like are intuitive, but one shouldn't forget that what one really talks about is, having run the RG for a very long time, what is the effective change in the stiffness at very long wavelengths? And the intuition simply doesn't include all that running of the RG. But I agree with you, more often than not, it's root 3 by root 3 order that wins, but not always.
So if you modify the original model by adding J2, the real J2 in Kagome, depending on its sign, right? You have intuition there, which way?
Yeah, I mean, then it's just energetic selection. So basically, So on this plot, what you basically do is you go way over to the right. So you would just select this in a very, very robust way, and you would select it with a saturated order parameter. If you added J2, a real J2 okay, now I see. So if you added the J2 in the Kagome and not in the POTS language, okay.
Yes, the original mode.
You would then project it. So there are two options, either it frustrates or doesn't frustrate the Heisenberg Hamiltonian. If it doesn't, then you just map it onto the POTS Hamiltonian, then you're either sitting at this equals plus or minus infinity, so that's clear. And if not, then you need to think a little bit harder, but I don't know off the top of my head which one it is that's happening.
Having an unsaturated moment at zero temperature, is that a general phenomena of order by disorder? Like, should I think of, if I had other system with order by disorder, would I also have a...
So it's definitely not a general feature. So if you look at the size of the quadrupolar and octopolar orders, they actually saturate.
Okay.
And a lot of these, like J1, J2, the work by Premi and Pierce a long time ago, where you get also collinear order by disorder, and it becomes perfectly collinear. So it really is quite a specific feature of this case, where it's the sub-leading term, which, where the temperature factors cancel out so that you still have this classically fluctuating state in the limit of zero temperature. Normally, Boltzmann factors either go to zero or they diverge, but in this case, they're just perfectly balanced. So this is really the one thing that is really non-trivial that came out of this new algorithm, that we were able to see this flat approach to zero temperature. It really could have gone other ways.
If you consider a three-dimensional coupling between Kagome layers, would you expect something like a splitting of phase transitions?
Like what?
Then you will have a finite phase transition.
Mm-hmm.
And would you expect that octopolar order is stabilized first, and then it's followed by dipolar order at lower temperatures? Or it will be a one transition, like, well, all of them break continuous symmetry, so they cannot take place at finite in 2D, but in 3D, would you expect several phase transitions?
Okay, I'm really answering on the wing here. The operators of different scaling dimensions, I would a priori not expect them to order at the same temperature, but legal disclaimer here, I'm not sure.
We have time maybe for one more question, if there's any.
This is a naive question, but if I think about a large spin quantum Kagome and think in the limit of large S, and how do I think about that going over the classical limit and where these sorts of effects would come in?
Right. So in these strongly frustrated systems, any perturbation is strong. So this is always a game of the order in which you take limits. So and in this sense, you basically have to ask yourself, do I take the limit S going to infinity before T going to zero and so on? So unfortunately, it turns out that normally, if you take two different perturbations which want to give you different things, different results, then they're simply, in case you take one limit first, you get one result. If you take the other limit first, you get another result. For 1 over S spin fluctuations, like Olivier just said, you actually also expect root 3 by root 3 order, and therefore there's no competition between them, so you basically get ordering which would be which would be weak in temperature and in 1 over S, but which both of them agree on. So that's what you'd get. Whereas if you added J2 with the wrong sign, depending on whether you take J2 to 0 before you take T to 0, you'd get either one or the other. Okay?